the set, please. I'm talented.
Don't forget, I'm Julian.
Is JFK
still
dead?
Oh,
pardon me, we're shooting something. Paul, how
there you go again, Bob.
This fake
it's going to be a
to
show without
dangerous
that.
Dangerous bullshit news is
Where's
for your
Chicken
health.
Joe? Listen to
Charlie will die.
But
don't bullshit news.
Self-fired himself.
Oh. Right, could we do
that
again?
That would be called
I'll beat
quitting.
It. That's what, take my glasses off. Like
can we edit him down, please? Can we get this done by next week?
Rockin' start.
Hello, America! And all the soldiers in Kazakhstan. We got a listener in Kazakhstan, you know that.
That was such a fun day.
Not for Mannequin Joe. Almost got him run over. Watch right here. I think Bob was a little stewed. Or maybe he's afraid of the car. Which was it, Bob?
Yeah, it might have been a little stewed. Bad.
But we put him in and nailed his head.
Joey had a workplace injury.
He didn't bitch.
No, he did.
Let's just break it loose. Dub or bullshit?
That part
Dub or bullshit?
No bullshit!
No bullshit!
No bullshit!
All right. Welcome back to No Bullshit News. What's up, peeps?
Hey, you wonder why you scare people.
That's what the mayor of Flint said. Well, you know, Charlie, you scare people, the new mayor of Flint. I'm like, I scare people because I know my business. But I've been chastised by a friend of ours.
Oh, for what?
Too much chat. Get to the news. All right. Oh. So we'll get to the news. First of all, Facebook Live is brought to you by American Coney Island. Holidays are coming. Great gift. Get the Coney kit, all the fixings. Go to AmericanConeyIsland.com. Don't forget the Thanksgiving Day parade's coming up. Right at the terminus of the parade at Michigan Avenue. And Lafayette is American Coney Island institution. Really recommend it. Look, on today's show, these are my wife's glasses. Keep losing them. Even these little readers are very expensive. I'm very happy. I've admired Matt Taibbi, the celebrated writer from Rolling Stone, longer than I've known him. And he's got this book. We got it up here on Facebook Live. What am I looking at? God damn this show.
It's up,
all right.
Charlie, you just can't see it.
Thank you very much. There it is. Okay. Hate Incorporated, which reveals what most people think of as the news is, in fact, a twisted wing of the entertainment business. An insider's guide to the ways mainstream media manipulates us and tells us lies. And believe me. And believe, this is an awesome book. Matt is a four-time veteran of the presidential campaigns. He's sitting on the plane. He pissed all the media off when he started writing about them because it's a chubby little club. He reveals exactly how the consent is manufactured, right? And he's also the guy who famously wrote, the first thing you know to need to know about Goldman Sachs is that it's everywhere. This is at the collapse. Matt's the first guy to really put it together. The world's most powerful investment bank is a great vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity, relentlessly jamming its blood funnel into anything that smells like money. It's a fact, right? Which will lead us into the news today, which least of which is Jamie Dimon going on 60 Minutes, telling us all the great stuff he did for Detroit. We'll get to that. I just want to get to the news quickly before we have Matt on, all right? We good with that? There she is. Let's start with this one. There's our congresswoman, Rashida Tlaib. Whoa. Guess what happened, Bob?
What'd she do?
The House Ethics Committee has expanded its campaign finance probe into Ms. Tlaib. What did she do?
She's in trouble.
What'd she do? She paid herself a salary out of her campaign fund, which is allowed. Right?
During the campaign.
During the campaign. It's to encourage regular people to seek the office.
Right.
So you can feed your baby while you're running. Right? But once the election ends, you can't pay yourself. So what did Rashida do? She took $1,000 a week through the campaign. How do I know? I was watching. Because this is Detroit, and all of the people running against her kept calling. That doesn't look good. Look.
No, it doesn't.
Look, most of her money's not even coming from Michigan. All true, but all legal.
Wow.
Until it was done and nobody was looking, and then we found out what? Her campaign wrote her a $17,500 check and or checks after the election.
How do people think they're stealing money by writing a check? Like, there's a paper
trail. Right, there's a paper trail.
There's a paper trail.
So, you know, the investigators from the House Ethics Committee got some emails, right? She's going back and forth with her staff saying, I'm just not going to make it through the campaign without a stipend. And do you think the campaign can still pay me a stipend until the general? I'm trying to get out of debt. Okay.
Wow. So checks and emails.
Why didn't you know, why did she do herself a lump sum? Could it be that if you were paying yourself $2,000 a week, I would have been up your ass? Because I would have been up your ass. $1,000 a week is $52,000 a year. Okay, reasonable. What were you doing? Is this a little PR game? This in the wake of what? What? What did we report here that local people are too afraid to do? Always wait.
About the house?
She was cheating on her house, the taxes in Southwest Detroit, where she took a poverty credit that lowered her taxes by thousands while she was renting it out when the law says you got to live in it.
It's got to be your homestead.
And only when this shit started coming out about the ethics committee did she even change the homestead tax credit. You owe the school districts, Rashida.
Yeah.
Now, that's not the first time. You'll remember she got caught when she was married claiming two homesteads, claiming she lived in a house in Detroit that she didn't live in, a rental. Had to pay that back. And that wasn't the first time. In 2010, her daddy called me straight up out of the blue. I didn't know him from anybody. I had to call her to check it was actually him. He said, she did not live in the house. It's my house. She's a liar. Now, let's just make the news and move on to the next one. The point here
So she was getting a homestead exemption on the house she lived in, but it was her father's house?
No, she was just claiming residency so she could run for state legislature.
Oh, I see.
She wasn't actually living in the district.
But daddy said she
wasn't living
there.
According to daddy.
And daddy said she wasn't living there anyway.
Right.
So they don't have a good relationship?
No. I was just apparently not.
I called and go, what's with daddy? He goes, he was awfully beat me. I'm like, what?
Oh, that's another story.
I'm just a reporter new into Detroit. Like, what the fuck is this?
Right, how'd you get in the middle of
but
that?
But that's my life with her. This is what I see. Now, I first met her when they were talking about the bridge. They were really advocating. They're in on the other side. They're very political. They're trying not to get Maroon to build the bridge, but they've got interests. They want to build the bridge, right? Which begs the question, and we'll move on. Where's the fucking Gordie Howe Bridge? I made some calls. I made him to Ottawa. I made him to Windsor. I made him to Lansing.
And you found out?
Where's the financing? They're more watercolors, folks. Don't believe the bullshit. Matt Taibbi will be on. Don't believe the bullshit. It's a game. Who's advocating for you? There's more than two sides. Everybody's a side. Everybody has a point of view. We can do better than this. Now, again, Rashida, I don't care about your marriage, your debts, your children, your personal life. I think that shit's bullshit. But this is public money you owe. This is public money you were using. Is this like Trump and his tax returns? His $900 million write-off? No. But if you're going to yap, be clean. Be clean publicly. Thank you very much. Number two. Duggan in the demolition. Ooh. We've been telling you, telling you. Now he wants $250 million more dollars to keep tearing them down, right? I suspect, and I just suspect, this isn't really for tearing them down, Karen. This is for possibly massive federal fines and cleanup for the shit they did before.
I would assume so, Charlie. I don't understand, but it's a very aggressive campaign that he's pushing to try to get it on the ballot and to get voter approval. And I just don't think people are buying it.
With no oversight, no rules, no caps.
Well, they did that early on when they created the land bank and the shift from the legislative oversight. When that first happened, I said, okay, everybody's got to watch the money because now there is no oversight. And you see what happened.
And let's go to what's going on. So the feds are like, where's the money? Okay, like you blew it out of proportion. While we were on the air last week, here's the news. The Auditor General of Detroit, an independent body, finished his four-year investigation that began with, yeah, that's right, Bob and I story about, you know, where's the money? And Matt, Fox 2. Finally got done because they stalled, and the Auditor General had to subpoena the city twice because they wouldn't give the records until this big bond issue. Okay, what did he find? Not only did we spend $250 million in federal money, Bob, We spent $250 million in city money that nobody knew about. And of that $250 million, almost $200 million went to administrative and soft costs. There's no itemized list of what that went to. That
wasn't buying up used properties or old properties.
That's padding.
That's padding.
The feds.
And don't forget about the interest.
Well, that's not interest. The new thing he wants to borrow would carry interest.
Right.
This is just money that evaporated.
Right.
The guy told you, not me. This when we were on the air. So now what happens? Brenda Lawrence, the congresswoman who represents Peace of Detroit, finally chimes in. This, folks, is why you got to listen. You got to believe what's going on down here. She's now asked the feds to freeze the rest of the money they sent, which it's almost gone. You're a little bit too late, Brenda.
A little bit late,
you should have listened. She wants them to freeze it and test every hole that they put dirt in to see if the dirt was poison that we reported. Mm-hmm. Probably a lot of it came from the highway and was contaminated.
Right. But remember, he also talked about the increased cost because of, remember the dirt cost?
Good, clean dirt.
Yeah. Right. The trucking cost.
This is boring, folks.
Transportation, right.
But this is how it happens. This is how we get ripped off. It's boring. But this is how we get ripped off. And if we borrow $250 million for Detroit, 30 years they pay for that. And if they ever need anything like a school, and you're in the suburbs, you get to pay for it because they can't borrow the $250. Get me? We're all connected. So, what makes Brenda Lawrence, a Democrat in Congress, very big and influential, attack the Democratic mayor in an election year?
Ship is sinking.
And at the same time, yeah. While we were down here last week, the attorney general physically went into City Hall and laid down subpoenas asking for 5 years of the mayor and his staff's emails in connection with deleting government documents, right, that we're entitled to have. Why would the Democratic attorney general go after supposedly the Democratic machine boss? Because there's a net.
The ship is sinking.
Believe me. Believe me. I think so, too.
It is.
I'm doing a lot of reporting. And it was first reported here. I just got to tell you that. Instead of I'm reading when we first reported it here. That's why we're in the lower level, so we can do this for you. Because, like, hang around for Matt Taibbi, I swear, because here's a guy who's on the cover. Sean Hannity and Rachel Maddow. Hate, Inc., how we're being manipulated to take a side.
Yeah, we are.
I'm only on the side of all of us. Okay, so, real quickly, I talked to Mark Lockridge. You know, we talk. Because he's the numbers police. Here's just the tail end of it, just so you can get a taste of what the guy's thinking.
You've been, as the Auditor General, you've issued reports these last couple of years on the demolition. You've been interviewed by federal agents.
Yes, the feds have interviewed
him. Hot is that investigation? And now knowing what you know, because you've lived this for a few years now, how much trouble do you think they're in?
Well, Charlie, I would tell you, I hate to speculate on, you know, the depth of what types of trouble they may be in. But, you know, it's clear for everyone to see, you know, that, that there's a lot going on and there's been a whole lot going on since the beginning. And so if I'm being a cautious individual, you know, I like to see some of these things play out. I would like to see a more recent sample of, you know, because the administration is saying that they have the things together. And so I just feel like they need to prove themselves out. But, you know, but we got to wait and see. And I won't speculate, but I will tell you that we've collected over 250 articles on the subject. So if that's any indication.
What do you mean, 250 articles?
I'm sorry, Charlie, what'd you say?
250 news articles?
Yes, we've collected over probably closely, almost up to 300 news articles over these last 4 years on demolition. And of course,
And you've been living it, and your conclusion here is, if I could just put it down in the simple,
good, Charlie.
Is there's your answer. It doesn't look good.
Yeah, nope, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. The indications are not good. Everything that we've gone through, Again, I can't, you know, as the Auditor General, I can't provide the assurance. And that's what I'm in the business of doing, right? Is business assurance, trying to provide assurance. And my report doesn't do that. And I couldn't do
End
that.
End it there, man.
The numbers don't look good.
The numbers don't look good. They do not look,
they don't look good.
So during all of this, there were threats to slash his budget from the executive suite. Get it? Because he is funded through the city of Detroit.
Right.
It's a nasty game, local politics. Yeah. And you know what? If you want to do demo right, you call ADR. Experienced, overseeing more than $250 million in private and public construction projects since 2001, including demolition. Correct, Karen?
Exactly.
Former Muckety Muck in the Bing administration, Karen?
Muckety Muck?
ADR, competent. Reduce your costs, increase your bottom line. ADR, save clients millions. Millions. ADR consultants are experts in procurement, government compliance, and demolition, Mike. ADR, honest, ethical, smart. So then why did they get charged with something?
That's a good question.
When they were working for the state and the city. And now...
You know why, Charlie. Come on.
He got paid back and he's getting all of his money. And they're now saying what a great job he did. Barry Ellentuck, 248-318-9424 for a consultation. If you want it honest, if you want it clean, and if you really want to save money. Providing construction management IT consulting services for your company, municipality, or law enforcement agency. Get the job done right, on time, on budget. ADR Consultants, 248-318-9424. Next piece of news. Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase.
Big muckety muck.
Got a nice, big, fat blowjob on 60 Minutes this past Sunday, right? For all the swell work he's doing in Detroit. He's come with a couple of $1 million. He's giving loans. He's teaching people to use social media, you know, using his hot tracker to see where people drive and walk, right? He and Mike are really doing great stuff. Wow, what a great guy. J.P. Morgan Chase, Wall Street, one of the world's largest banks, just loving us.
You know, Charlie, my takeaway from that, and I know there's some more content that you want to talk about, but they interviewed Mike Duggan. And, you know, he tried to paint the picture, as everybody does, that when he took office, all hell had broken loose and was running wild. That's not true. And he specifically named four things. He says, when I took office, he said the lights weren't on. The buses weren't running. People had to wait an hour for an ambulance and our police cars were raggedy and people were leaving the city.
That's all true.
Well, let me tell some of it, but this is the reality of it. He didn't turn the lights on. I mean, if we're going to talk fact, this isn't, you know, and people say, oh, well, you know, because you were part of the Bing administration, you're sensitive about it. Yeah, because, you know, we worked hard. And so it's just a matter of fact.
So you got to put in place, and the work just had started. That's important.
The work was started. All Mike Duggan had to do was flip the switch. The lighting authority was already in place. DTE was already, everything was on board.
Everybody
he flipped the switch.
But instead, he took control of the board. And now we got have to replace some of those lights because they're defective.
They are defective. But that's fine. But I'm saying don't take credit for something that you didn't do.
That's what mayors do.
Well, the second thing are the buses. We went to D.C. and from the Obama administration got a $70 million Tiger grant that purchased the new buses. So that was already in the process. Maybe he took delivery when Joe Biden showed up and they shook hands and the new buses came.
That took credit
and that was already there. Right. The emergency vehicles. Dave Bean called Roger Penske, Dan Gilbert, and some other business people in the city and said, hey, our emergency vehicles need replacing. They put the money in the pot, bought the new vehicles, rolled them out on Hart Plaza downtown.
I'll never forget that when that happened because Mayor Bing's wife came up and said, I appreciate you calling me a handsome woman.
I'm not having anything to do with that.
It's great.
And the fourth thing is that Mike Duggan said, and people were leaving the city. Well, in case anybody hasn't noticed, they're still leaving. We've not rebuilt population, which was one of the things that he said, judge his success on. We are not rebuilding population. Okay. So just point of clarity.
That's good because you got to keep history correct. Everybody knows politicians take credit for shit they didn't do.
And I understand that each administration builds on the accomplishments of the past.
And I'm glad this is your life's work. But here's what I'm saying. My real point is the things that you used to take credit for that were really yours, like demolition, you don't say a goddamn word about it because you know.
Crime.
Right? The police. Crime's down. Nobody's saying that now. Nobody believes it. You haven't made a dent in the way people are living. And I know people listening say, downtown's cool, right? There's restaurants to go to. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. Thank you, public subsidies. Thank you, Mr. Illich. And thank you for the small business owners taking a chance. But that's not how the budget's structured.
And that's not how life in the neighborhoods are.
Well, let's do this. Let's play a clip from 60 Minutes where Leslie Stahl actually asks Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, about his role in the collapse of Detroit.
Detroit was in a lot of trouble before the financial crisis, but the financial crisis just did them in 100%. Yeah. That was crushing. Do you feel in any way that you're atoning for the sins of Wall Street when you go and put your effort into Detroit? Is that in your head?
I wouldn't use the word atone. I all think we owe back to society.
But Detroit specifically? Financial crisis just decimated the city.
Yes. And I think that we all have to re-earn our trust a little bit because of what happened. It's okay to say, yeah, we should do better than we did last time. And I think that's true for everybody who was involved in the crisis.
The bank has also brought in additional...
Well, what's left out of that, Bob?
Not much.
Yes, something pretty major that wasn't addressed. On November 2013, J.P. Morgan Chase entered into a $13 billion fraud settlement, the largest in United States history, three times larger than the Exxon Valdez settlement.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
And what was it? What were they settling? The bogus mortgages and the packages, right, that destroyed your wealth, Detroit, Michigan, America. World.
Subprime.
Right? The economies and the cities. So, what did that settlement entail? I'll quote you directly from Reuters on that day. Quote, $2 billion will be for assorted purposes, including new loans for low and moderate income borrowers in areas, Detroit, that have been hard hit by the housing crisis and for demolition of homes. Let's put that in.
Wait for it, yeah.
This shows you the scope and the sweep of this interconnected crap, because you can almost commission a story. J.P. Morgan calls 60 Minutes, another behemoth, CBS. Get yourself a blowjob and never mention this. You're not doing us a favor. I remember walking out of Fox 2. Mike Duggan was walking in for Let It Rip, and I asked him this day about it. I go, hey, Mr. Mayor, this is required by a federal court. He said, well, they could have gone anywhere. I'm happy to take it. I said, fair enough. But stop with this. A couple of Milski. And they're loans. Not even charity. They're loans. Please.
It's homework, Charlie.
Please, folks, please. Don't give up on it. Don't take a side. Take the side of your neighbor. All right, finally. In the news, Flint swore in a new mayor, Sheldon Neely, this week. I talked to him on the phone. Short answer is this. What are you yawning for, Jason? You tired? It's just Karen's son.
It's cold in here, man.
It's like, these guys are great. These are like the two mannequins. It's like white mannequin Joe and black mannequin Jason. And I'm trying, we got to think of something for these young men to do. You know what I mean? Young men get idle. They start doing stuff. Stealing trucks.
Stop with the media bullying, Charlie.
You're bullying me, Bob.
Charlie?
Yes.
Stop the media bullying.
Shut up, Bob. You too, Bob. How come, you know, we did a pretty good job on Bob and nobody bitched? And it's slight, but people are starting to bitch that I'm a negative guy and I'm tired of listening to you. I think the point is, people, you're not hearing enough of it.
Charlie, stop listening to people.
I know, but stop. My job is to listen to people.
I understand that, but the thing
right,
about...
Jason?
But yeah, you got to listen.
Look at that. Well, listen to this one. Jason, what do you think?
But I'm saying people give feedback. Feedback should be constructive.
It's cool.
I mean, because who's saying that we get too much chatter? It's a damn talk show. What are we supposed to do?
This is a news show.
I understand, but how else do we deliver the news if we don't talk? I'm offended by that because I like to talk, and now I feel like I should be quiet.
No, you keep talking.
All right. Well,
okay. Well, here's what Mr. Neely said. Okay. The finances are a cataclysm, right? They were shredding so much paper in Flint City Hall, my internal sources said they even shredded the Chinese takeout menus. Swear to God.
They must have had notes on them.
I'm in. I'm everywhere. I'm everywhere. Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike Duggan. How do I know there's a cockroach in a can? I'm everywhere. I'm everywhere. Your people are my people. How do I know about the crime, Chief? Your people are my people. Because there are people, dedicated public servants, that notices some shit. And they don't just tell me stuff, and I go blabbing it or writing it. Then I get down to the hard work of finding it. Just homework. A lot of it's not true.
But you all do right. Your homework, Charlie.
Okay, now here's the other thing. Here's the bullshit. The darling of the left, right? Karen Weaver. Karen Weaver, the darling of the left, leaves in a haze of corruption allegations and investigations. And remember, again, we're going to have Matt on in a moment. Because she was a member of the club never reported how she went out and that the real people, mostly Democrats, of Flint told her to take a flying fuck. A flying fuck. And there's no, she was on stage with Hillary. She was in the commercials, right? Snoop Dogg came to town. Jada Pinkett Smith had lunch with her. We loved her.
Did she leave in the Bentley that she was riding around in during the campaign?
Oh, man. She had Jesse Jackson and Judge Mathis and outraged Sheldon Neely by 8 times. And still, because the true people, we the people, out there suffering, they want to take the shit.
But Charlie, that was too long for there not to have been any progress. People waited. They were patient. They are taking baths and bottled water. They did all of that. She promised and made a commitment to make a difference. And 4 years later, nothing had changed.
All right. And you know what? I should say, if you want to get your housing right, right? You want to get it right, right? There's some value to it. That's your investment.
Everybody does.
What you should do is call Hall Financial, right? What if I told you you could skip a mortgage payment and lower your overall payment, your monthly payment? Or if I told you that Hall Financial will not only walk you through the process of buying your home, but provide you with the top realtor in your area? Who doesn't want that type of full service? Flint, there's a little bump. Interest rates are low. Look into it. Hall Financial knows how to deliver 5-star service. That means your schedule, availability at night and on weekends. They're going to work for you. And you won't be charged hidden or extra fees. You know what you're getting when you work with Hall Financial. Call them today at 248-308-5000 if you're looking to purchase or refinance. Or chat with them online at davidhallmortgage.com. Give Hall Financial a chance today. The official mortgage lender of the No Bullshit News Hour. Equal housing lender, folks. NMLS. 1467435.
And I just closed a refi with them, and they were fantastic. Couldn't have been smoother, couldn't have been faster. I think they say, what, they do it in 18 or 19 days?
Yeah.
And they closed it. It was like 12.
Okay, 12,
on,
folks.
On mine.
Okay.
I'm not saying enough. That that's average.
Enough.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I feel like we're rushing. Why are we rushing today?
Because we're rushing. Because we're going to try to do a show in an hour. It's called the No Bullshit News Hour.
We do a show in an hour every week.
Huh?
We do a
we
show.
We do it in like an hour 40, an hour 28, an hour.
Oh, so that's 58. Why we cut out the chit chat? Is that what it is?
No, just I want to get through the news.
All of it is news. It's a news show, you said.
And then do some chit chat with Matt.
Okay, well then get Matt on the phone. I'm ready to chat.
That's what I'm trying to do. See? Damn, he's like my basement wife.
Lower level.
Are we going out after this?
Yeah, we are.
All right, we're going out, right, Bob? We can talk about the future.
Sure.
With
Joey and Jason?
Yeah. Here.
Joey's like, I'm not hanging out with you.
Hey, mannequin twins. So what's your idea for expanding the show out? Thanks, guys.
They're thinking.
Is it too rushed? I was just trying to get the news.
I know, but I feel like we're rushing. Like, okay, so I got it. I got the time thing. Okay, good. But it's like, geez. I felt like we missed stuff.
Because I had to do this.
Okay. So now what?
The mayor of Flint called me up this morning.
Okay.
Just wanted to get on the record. No bullshit news. He appreciates that we're also keeping track of his community.
Good.
Okay. So I had to record this on speakerphone into my iPad because that's what we do here, Jason. You don't have the technology you possess. Huh? That is technology.
My man.
It's technology. Think about that. That I'm gonna, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna write that on the whiteboard here, right? For everybody in the class to see. That is technology. Thank
amen.
You.
Amen.
You get full credit for that, Mr. Spicoli. All right, so here's Mayor of Flint, Sheldon Neely, just an hour or so ago.
Sheldon Neely, Mr. Mayor of Flint, congratulations, sir, I think.
Well, thank you so much.
Let's get right to it. Look, not only is Flint on the verge of insolvency, there's maybe 4 or 5 years left in the pension fund, but the schools might go insolvent by March. There's just been an announcement of emergency closures of a third of the schools over Christmas. Can't afford to write a $75,000 check to a snow removal contractor. A teacher's car was robbed outside of this week's emergency board meeting. Crime's through the roof. How you got to look now. It's been 4 days. How bad is it fiscally? What are you seeing?
Well, I see we need to take a drastic change in direction and to try to make sure that we operate with a sense of urgency to make sure that we can perform with the things that's necessary to make sure we don't have all those pending things, those pending dooms and disaster that you kind of described about the school district and other entities inside the city of Flint.
He's not
it's
denying that.
Pretty bad, though, right? We were talking earlier in the week, you're like, it's cataclysmic.
Well, you know, I described it by like saying it's like, you know, to fix this problem is like threading a needle by moonlight. But the good news, Charlie, is that we have thread, we have a needle, and we have moonlight. So we just got to get the concerned minds and the right personnel and the right people to be able to help us get through this maze that we have now. And I'm very optimistic that we can do so. You know, one of the great additions that we just added to the team as far as performance and financial analysis and direction is Eric Scorsoni. Dr. Scorsoni from Michigan State University, which is a leading person in finance in our state of Michigan.
He's the former state deputy treasurer, is he not?
He is.
How do I know that stuff?
We're also a professor at Michigan
it's
State
weird.
University. You know, and so he is going to come on.
It's weird.
And paying attention.
Some different things around the area of finance, because as well as the state of Michigan is providing some additional resources. Yep. And so we know what's going on in our community. And so we are under no illusion that we have some problems, but we're amassing a team to be able to overcome the challenges that we face and to get us on a right trajectory to recovery.
We've had a lost 4 years. I think we know that. That's why you're in office. Not even the pipes are done. Election night, the night you won, there were, and then next morning, there were paper shredding trucks. My people inside City Hall said they went so far as to even shred the takeout Chinese menus. So what do you make of that?
Well, you know, it was definitely not the ideal situation for a transition, but it speaks to, what their mindset was at that particular time. But we're moving forward. We're going to be looking at some of those things that's missing in City Hall, and then we'll take an assessment and look at it and see if it reaches criminal behavior. But we can't make
good
that
for him.
Assumption
we're
right
investigating
now.
So Weaver.
Evaluation,
did you hear that?
For criminal behavior.
Looking.
That is a piece of news. Let me just say finally this. I know you're busy. You're putting your staff together. You made mention this week that you may consider switching the water source again and maybe going with the KWA. Is that for real? Are you considering that?
No, that was an overstatement or over-reporting of it. That's not in the first, second, third, or it's not even in the top 20 things that we're looking at right
good.
Now. Yeah, we have to really, really focus right now.
Everybody
on
hear that in Flint. Okay, they're backing off that.
Make sure that we're not insolvent. But we will be working to try to figure out ways to reduce the cost of water and improve the quality of water in our community. They're taking a good, hard look in the assessment to where we are. And so just beginning day four, we have done a fantastic job as a team moving forward. We have a lot of willing partners coming on board from the philanthropic sector, from the private sector, lending, in some cases, lending us some employee power, some bright minds. And so I'm very optimistic, Charlie, for all the support and the community around the element of saying that we need to improve the quality of life of residents inside the city of Flint and get them on the right track. And so all good news from City Hall. We'll be working, and you'll be one of the first that we let know if things change.
All right, we appreciate it. I mean, I'm glad you're looking at it with a rosy face because, you know, from this seat, you got a monster of a job. Thanks for taking it, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you, and God bless you.
You as well, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay. Hey, wow. So there's a marked sea change right there. Bringing in some outside help, not insular, not bringing in the goons with the suits, right? Trying to get the money in order. Talking to the public, right?
Not going back to the Flint water.
Well, and if you maybe misspoke or overstated it, you've learned right away. Okay, hold on. Maybe that's not such a good idea.
Yeah.
That right there is at least something.
Yeah.
Again, we like to work with the government. We'd like to inform the public, keep things on track, because Flint basically told Weaver, go take a flying fuck. Let me. Karen, any thoughts on that?
No, I just, you know, I mean, like you said, he's bringing, you know, he's going to involve Michigan State University, just, you know, external. When you start recycling the same people, the same voices, you're going to get the same outcome. So, no, I agree with you. It's a good first start.
You know what they should do? They're looking at finances. Mm-hmm. They can afford all the bigwigs, but you out there cannot afford the former deputy treasurer of the state of Michigan. You can, however, give Luke Nowacki a call. Right?
It's transitions.
Thank
today,
you.
Man.
Pretty good it is, right? Because the
you
market's
down, Charlie.
The market's up, the market's down. Overreaction is not the strategy for the long term investor. Luke Nowacki at Pinnacle Wealth, 248-663-4748 for rational financial advice. Look at the market's ping pong. Listen to the TV pundits. They don't know what they're talking about. Economic doom is here. It's clear skies. And then the market rebounds significantly the next day. Or ping pong some more. After a while, week, the market is exactly where it was a month ago. Will these gains hold? I don't know. Do you? What's the Fed going to do? I don't know. Do you?
I don't.
Nor does any TV talking head. Call Luke Nowacki at Pinnacle Wealth. Position you and your investments, retirement, and college saving plans for the long term, the way that you view life and what's comfortable for you.
Right. Grow your wealth.
248-663-4748. Securities and investment advisory services offered through Royal Assiance Associates, Inc. Member FINRA/SIPC. Royal Assiance Associates, Inc. is separately owned in other entities and or marketing names. Products or services referenced here are independent of Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Ain't that the fact?
Nice job.
Thank you. Now, look, this is... You on the phone, Matt?
Yes, I am.
How are you, brother?
How's it going, Charlie?
Really good. Let me just say this, man. I've admired you much longer than I've known you. I've always been, we've done similar things in life. You wrote about very famously, you know, Goldman Sachs. You write about politics. You write from the level of, you know, power. And I write from the level of the street. So, you know, I'll write about Detroit. You write this new, excellent, this book made me laugh. Made me think, Hate Inc. Right? I wrote one called Shit Show. It's more like from the streets, right? It's about the wrestling crowd you're talking about. But let me start.
Well, you won a Pulitzer Prize, and I didn't do that. So I think.
But you wrote more bestsellers than me, man. Let me say this. Okay, it's called Hate Inc. It's self-published. Why don't you real quick introduce it for us?
Yeah, I mean it's a book now. It's out by OR Books.
And it's very nicely bound and ever imprinted. It's not cheap.
They did a good job. I mean, originally I had a little deal with a company called Substack, and contractually I wasn't really allowed to blog because I work at Rolling Stone. So the only thing I could really do was books. So I serially wrote a book, actually a couple books. Through this site, Substack.com. And this was the project that I worked on a lot last year, which was kind of intended originally to be like a rethink of manufacturing consent, which I'm sure you probably read at some point.
Yeah,
most
Noam
reporters
Chomsky,
have.
Yeah.
Yep. And it sort of ended up being a book about how the reporting business has changed and kind of gone, you know, for the worse in the last 20 or 30 years or so, and I imagine we probably have pretty similar feelings about a lot of these things.
Try me. First of all, let me say this. On the cover is, in red, Sean Hannity, right? And on the right, in blue, is Rachel Maddow. What do you mean hate? I have no, people don't think of, maybe they do, Rachel Maddow is a hater. Maybe a lot of people don't think Sean Hannity is. Go ahead, Bob. You can.
Yeah, I was just going to say
they're opposite sides of the same coin. You know, one's on the right, one's on the left.
Yeah, and I think what people don't understand is a lot of people don't think about this because they think of the news as a public service. But, you know, it's a consumer product. And what MSNBC is doing is commercially the same idea. It's the same strategy as what Fox is doing. Fox's innovation in the early 90s was really this idea that they're not going to get the whole audience, you know, the way that Walter Cronkite was trying to do. So let's shoot for just one demographic and just try to dominate it. And they did that by kind of feeding an older conservative audience news that they knew that they were going to like or respond to. And that's kind of what's going on with MSNBC and to a lesser extent CNN. Now they've identified a demographic and they're just kind of giving it a news feed that is sort of pre-configured for that audience. And so it's really based a lot on rancor and anger and giving a lot of bad news about kind of the other side. But it's not news reporting the way, you know, you and I were traditionally kind of raised to do it. So it's different.
Yeah, but that's kind of like how you made a career, right? Kind of like take out the knife and put it in the liver.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I was definitely raised as a traditional kind of third-person news reporter, and I grew up in a family, where my father was a television reporter who was, a traditional sort of just the facts, ma'am, news reporter, not an editorialist in any way, shape, or form. So I kind of grew up in that tradition, and I did end up being, very much in sort of an editorial writer, or at least a reporter who had a lot of point of view in my pieces. But I think that the difference is that these days, people who are coming up in the press, they're not really as educated in the traditional just reporting approach, the way most people who came up in the media business once upon a time were. They're kind of starting off as kind of hot takers. Yeah, and that's new.
Dude, they're pussies.
So are the platforms driving the personalities, or are the personalities driving the platform in terms of the subject or the lack of objectivity in delivery? And what does this do for the American people in terms of knowing what's going on?
I think the platforms are driving it, frankly, because what they're doing now is, you know, if you work at a company like MSNBC, it's not like anybody comes down and tells you you have to stay away from X, Y, and Z topic, or maybe they do. I
mean, they did it to me many times.
Did they? Okay. Yeah. But for the most part, I think what happens with most people in the business is that you just kind of know what they want and what they don't want. And, you know, if your audience is the, you know, the quote unquote liberal audience or the blue state audience, you just know what stories they want nowadays, and it's particularly easy in the Trump era. And you know that the only way you're going to get eyeballs these days is by kind of continually upping the ante and having, ever more aggressive takes. It's sort of similar to ESPN, right? Like, who's the top dog on those channels? It's, you know, it's people like Stephen A. Smith. Where it's great with sports, but I don't think it's so healthy with politics. News.
Yeah,
because sports is fantasy and escapism.
It's supposed to be. Yeah.
Well, and it's corrosive too because it pits us versus them. You know that mentality.
Like if it's the same thing, then Bob, politics is now. I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I think saying. What Matt's saying is they've really turned it into two schools of thought. They're like there's no room for the socialists or the anarchists or the libertarians, right? Or the Green Party. It's Republican, Democrat, two sides. That's
right.
It.
Right. My way or the highway.
And a conspicuously, a really massive demographic that's absent is the group of people who don't particularly care at all. Or they do care and they just don't like any politicians particularly. Or they're tuned out. And I mean, the number of people who don't vote in this country is enormous. And a lot of those people, and I talk to people on the campaign trail, the reason they don't vote is because they have just no belief. You know, a lot of them, they don't think their vote counts. They don't think that the people, if they vote one way or the other, that's going to matter. And those people are not really represented in the news at all. That entire lack of belief in the system, it's not represented, even though it's very, very prevalent in the actual country. You don't see it in the news landscape.
You don't. And you know what? If you actually add it all up, those that are on the side of the right and those that are on the side of the left are about the size of everybody that doesn't participate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, I think the total amount of people, you know, who are actually the organic audience of something like MSNBC or Fox, you know, it's, what is it, 25-30% at most, you know, of the viewing public. I mean, that would be their target demographic. And the number of people who are kind of don't feel like they're represented one way or the other on television, that's got to be close to half the country or more, I would think. And, you know, that's a huge story.
So does this help or hurt the democratic process overall? We talked about political apathy. People aren't voting and everybody's either clearly on one side or the other. What does this do for the overall democratic process?
I think it's very unhealthy the way the news landscape is constructed now, because it's just to take an example, the show Crossfire, which popped up in the 80s and kind of became a template for how we talk about politics in this country. Like, one of the core premises of that program is that the two people on screen can never come to an accommodation. They never compromise. They never agree about anything. They never work their way to a solution. And we've had a whole generation now of audiences who have been trained in this idea that that's what politics is. It's permanent combat. We don't agree with each other. We don't try to agree with each other. It's not a goal that people have to sort of reach out to the other side and kind of figure out who they are and find a middle ground. And so politics is really, it's become sports. It's become our team wins or our team loses. And I think that's extremely unhealthy, because it's eliminated this instinct for compromise and a mutual education and all sorts of other things. I mean, I'm not sure if you agree, but not only that,
yeah. Matt, it's like this. It's simplified, right? Let's take the football analogy. Matt Stafford sucks. Man, he throws interceptions. Nobody understands the offensive line play. They don't understand that the left tackle was supposed to pick up, you know, slide out and pick up the blitzing cornerback. And then you get what I'm saying? So
yeah, absolutely.
What I wrote in my book, Shit Show, available at Amazon.com, a great stocking stuffer, right? What I wrote was, we tend, because of this shit, to miss the really big things that damage us that we don't pay attention to. I'll go back and say NAFTA, WTO. This time around, I'll say, there was banking deregulation, the huge tax cuts that put all the money into the pockets of the wealthy, and now we're spending at a deficit of $1 trillion a year. That's the big thing, and nobody fucking talks about it.
Well, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I have this problem. I did a story last year about the failed Pentagon audit.
Oh, wait, man, dude, you did that?
Yeah.
Bob and I did that. We went to Washington. The United States Pentagon has never submitted nor passed an audit.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
It goes back to 1991. They just basically came back. You know, there was a private audit. They spent like $1 billion hiring a bunch of companies, and they came back and said the Pentagon's inauditable. And the amazing thing about this is it's the largest expenditure by far that we have in the government. And
let's say this again, yeah. Because, you know, I mean, it's noise. So let's slow down. It's by far the single biggest expenditure in the United States.
Right.
And we have no idea how and how much they're spending.
Yeah, like zero. It's the process is so incredibly arcane and baroque. The Pentagon is broken down into hundreds of different little fiefdoms that each have their own separate financial reporting systems, and nobody knows where the money is at any given time. And when they submit their proposed budgets for the following year, it's based on invented numbers. In other words, because the Pentagon doesn't know exactly how much it spent last year, when it asks for money from Congress for the next year, it basically says we need $50 million for X, because it doesn't know, it's guessing. In other words, because it doesn't know exactly what the numbers are. So we've been basically giving out budgets based on guesses for forever. And we've had a continually rising. And the point of all this is that this isn't a huge story that matters to everybody, but we don't do this story very much in modern media because you can't blame it on one side or the other. It's kind of common to both sides. They've all participated in it, and that's not the kind of story that modern news landscape likes. They like the simple hot takes, like you say. They don't want to know that the left tackle hasn't been at all. You know, nobody's been watching what he's up to for the last 30 years. I mean, that's kind of the way it works.
Matt, define we. You said we've been giving this. We've been passing. We've been approved. I just want you to say it. Define we. Who's doing this?
You mean who?
Yes. I want people to hear. I mean, because if this is happening, and it's happening on both sides, everybody's guilty.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that I've tried to point out in my reporting always, is that we all share some responsibility and lots of terrible things that happen. And just to take an example of the Pentagon audit, we voted in, like we the people voted in a lot of the politicians who have been complicit in not only continually raising the defense budget and engaging in chicanery, like the Pentagon sort of quietly raised its budget by adding a second line item called war funding, which has added like $150 billion in annual spending to the defense budget. And that's like a separate thing that a lot of members of Congress on both sides of the aisle quietly approved. And they did that to get out of mandatory caps on defense spending. So people who voted for members of Congress on both in the Democratic side and on the Republican side, whether they know it or not, they've been a part of this problem and this and many other problems, you know, that are terrible. But we tend not to tell audiences that they had a hand in things or that the politicians they liked did something bad. And that's, I think that's a consistent problem.
Hey, you know what I liked, man? The book is, you see, you're a serious man and you can hear you're a serious man. But this book is fucking funny. You can turn a sentence. And then, I mean, what do you know about kayfabe? Are you a wrestling fan?
I started to be in the last election cycle. Because I don't know how you watch Donald Trump and you don't figure out right away that there's a WWE angle there, right? And I wrote about this in the book, that all of my colleagues in the campaign trail, they were buying books like Mein Kampf and The Paranoid Style in American Politics, and right away I was like ordering all these books about wrestling because I. You know, Trump was a WWE character, and he was manipulating the press in, like, really interesting ways. So, I found this book, Controversy Creates Cash, by Eric Bischoff, and I started to get into it. And also, I think you have to learn to kind of get into wrestling in order to understand, you know, some of the mindset of people who, right? And so, that was something that I was trying to do with the book.
You know, it's funny, because Trump actually appeared in a...
WrestleMania.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And he fought McMahon.
It was good.
Yeah, it was really good. And, you know, Trump took the idea of the worst reality show ever invented, which is the presidential run-up, right? And he turned it into some shit. And as you're rightly right, people know he's an ass, right? But they're like, fuck it, blow it up, Donnie, kick him in the balls. We're not getting anything out here.
Exactly. Exactly, and that's exactly the mentality of people. Louis C.K. captured it a little bit in his show. Like, a lot of people were just like, you know what? I've been listening to people, these politicians say shit to me for, 20 years, 30 years, and they always lie. Nothing ever changes, so let's just blow it all up, you know? And they enjoyed the spectacle of Donald Trump kind of, you know, making everybody miserable and watching people like Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush and then later Hillary Clinton. They were just so appalled by the spectacle of Donald Trump's appearance on the campaign trail, the sacred campaign trail. And that was a real source of pleasure for people. I mean, you didn't have to go far to find people who would talk about this.
Oh, you loved it too.
Trail.
You loved it too.
Yeah,
and I tell you,
about
the media all loved it. Because
of course we did. Yeah,
it was a story.
Because you write in the book, you covered four presidential campaigns, and you were the young Hunter Thompson up there, like fucking writing about the media, right? And you're not allowed to write about the media, and they took your seat. They wouldn't even let you sit in your seat on the plane, and so they complained to the campaign. And they stuck you in the back of the plane. Is that correct?
They did. They stuck me in the back row with a bunch of cameras. And then I was actually back there for a little while with Alexandra Pelosi, the documentarian, Nancy Pelosi's daughter, who sort of committed the sin of going on. So she was doing a documentary about the campaign trail, and I guess her cameras too. They accidentally caught people in the working environment, which the reporters didn't like because they felt like in the book, there's a scene where a guy tells me it's a fucking no-fly zone, dude. You're not allowed to look in here. I got sent to the back with the bad kids in detention or something like that. It was ridiculous.
I looked at this campaign and I've been doing it a while. I did Schwarzenegger. I love the theater of it because it's such bad theater. I would do shit like smash a wine glass on my head, right? Or I would dress as security. I would dress as Schwarzenegger security exactly like them and then penetrate the security line and be able to feel that he's wearing a bulletproof vest. It's so lame. I was once told by the New York Times I was chasing his campaign bus because they would make the reporters' campaign buses go another way around so he could get to the site first. I'm chasing him in my Checker cab, smoking a one-foot cigar with the window rolled down so he could see me. And the national editor for the New York Times calls. They go, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm chasing the running man." And she says, she goes, "You're not on the bus?" I said, "No, I'm chasing the running man. He's right outside my window." She says, "I want you in that bubble. I want you in the bubble." So they
in
could
the bubble?
Yeah, so they could spin me with the daily horse shit. And I'm like, I covered the bubble yesterday and the day before and the day before. It's such
That's
shit.
That's really funny. Yeah, but they have like a limitless appetite for it. That's the part that I don't get, right? Like, how are they not bored by all that stuff? Right?
How big of a douche is Jim Acosta?
Well, you know, what's funny about that is that, again, there's a whole generation of people who are growing up now who think that's what adversarial journalism is, like standing up and shoving your finger in somebody's face in a press conference. Like, no, you know, actually, you know, like what Seymour Hersh does is adversarial. Like, if you get information that's really, really damaging to people and you don't care if it's going to hurt your career or if it's going to make your editors upset, like that's courageous reporting. Right. And just, you know, gesticulating on camera in front of a president that everybody at your station hates. Like, I don't know. That just feels like an extension of the WWE thing. But they just don't want to admit that they're part of it.
But I'm into it because I looked at it like, look, I'll do the show. So I would go to press conferences with my resume for Donald Trump and ask to be his vice president. Shit like that. Right. Because I know it's a show, but I would always be relaxed because my work was done and I'm just there assembling, you know, some sound bites, some fun stuff, some rim shot, right? Instead of being the monkey tapping on his keypad trying to get in a boring story nobody's going to read. So I always looked at it like this. Do the work, be courageous and independent and say what you have to say, but why let guys like Jon Stewart take the work that we do that's really hard, dispense with the bullshit, cut it down, and make it entertaining? I always felt I'm going to do that myself and cut him out of the picture, and I think that's what you do with your pen.
It's funny that you think you could be, because I had a very similar instinct. I mean, I put on a gorilla suit to cover Kerry once upon a time.
How dare you?
Right. Why cede all that territory to Jon Stewart or somebody like that? I mean, you're there. You might as well give people the kind of the sort of unvarnished thing and make it funny. And like, there's no reason not to do that.
But what does it say about the American people for us to just? I mean, are we
awesome?
Not that in that regard, Charlie. But the point is that, you know, we take what we're given. I mean, who's really asking, peeling away, if you or someone like Matt doesn't bring the story that has the substance and the content and the context, then we're left to walk away with the entertainment value, and we're making decisions based on a limited amount of information.
I'll answer this one, Matt.
Sure. Yeah.
People are just simply walking away.
Right.
That's just, right.
You know, look at cable. Cable doesn't get any ratings. At the highest point, like Maddow or Hannity or Tide now, they'll draw 3 million. David Muir on ABC News, he draws 10 million. Cronkite used to draw, what, 30 million?
So where are they going?
They're just going to their own little silos.
Twitter?
Yeah, they're going in podcasts and independent shows. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, shows like the Joe Rogan Show or Jimmy Dore or whatever. I mean, basically, I think the big networks, CNN, MSNBC, and to a lesser extent Fox, they just haven't reckoned with the fact that they just don't matter anymore. They matter to each other, and they matter to other journalists like you who work at the New York Times or the Washington Post. But the content in those places doesn't have the oomph that it used to, and people don't believe in reporting in the same way that they used to trust the big three networks, even though they weren't necessarily always right to do that in the past. But I don't know if you feel this way, Charlie. I just don't think that people have that kind of respect for the news agencies.
Not the agency, but they have respect for, like you said, it's atomized for individuals, right?
Right.
I think I have respect. You have respect, and people will seek it out because I look at it like if you respect them and you give them what they need, they're going to follow. I'll give you this example. I'll appear on Fox, okay? And when I'm done saying my shit, my reporting about people, just people and what we feel, I'll pick up a couple thousand followers. Then I'll go on NPR Boston, super liberal, and I'll pick up a couple thousand followers. And me and the host of either show are going to have a glass of wine. So if you just get rid of this blue and red and you talk sensibly to people, you'll find out that they are sensible, right? And they they figured out the game, and they're leaving.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's that there's a slow kind of departure from all these traditional outlets. People are kind of looking around for something else. And that's right. They trust individuals, but they don't necessarily trust the institutions the way they used to, which is interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to quote from your book here because that's supposedly what you're supposed to do with these things. The Russiagate era has so degraded journalism that even once reputable outlets are now only about as right as politicians, which is to say, barely ever, and then only by accident. What do you mean?
I mean, well, I think the Russiagate story, that was kind of a crossroads for me personally. You know, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, but, you know, and I lived in Russia for 11 years. So when this...
Вы говорите по-русски, друг?
Конечно, я понимаю.
Хорошо. Не понимаю ничего.
Ничего не понимаешь, а? So, yeah.
Hey, man, я люблю тебя, homie.
Where do you know you're Russian from?
Been around, man.
Around, okay, all right, excellent. When the Russia thing happened, my first reaction was, you know, this guy's not—he's a casino owner. He's not James Bond. I mean, the story didn't make any sense to me. And then, you know, the more I looked into it, I thought, well, parts of this just don't add up. And where's the evidence for it? Like, let's wait a little while before, you know, we pronounce this or that.
Where's the beef?
And they all just sort of jumped with both feet into this thing and pushed this narrative that, you know, the walls are closing in. He was, you know, he was an agent. He was going to be found at any moment, bombshells. And I think what happens with that is that they made a political decision that they were going to endorse a story because they liked the way it worked politically rather than behave the way the news people used to, which would be, you know, kind of wait and see and let's just go with what we know, you know, and let's not decide what the meaning of this thing is until we know for sure. And that's, I feel like they jumped the gun a lot, and we're going to lose a lot of respect because of stuff like
so
that.
So now, you know, the left, the Maddow becomes the Hannity.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, where's the qualitative difference once you jump on board with something like the Russiagate thing, you know, which is very conspiratorial and, you know, it was not a traditional, like, fact-finding mission. It was really very inquisitive. And it was kind of very similar to what Fox did with a lot of stories in the past. So yeah, I think that's where the similarity is.
Is that why we have this impeachment? Is like the impeachment part two? We didn't get you on Russia, so let's run the Ukraine bit.
I feel like it has something to do with it, and you also can't separate out the fact that the impeachment and Russiagate both, that they were both sort of ideal news stories. They were like the Lewinsky story. They were a real boon to the cable networks because you could market it as you have to watch this all the time because any minute, you know, it might end a presidency. And so it's an emergency. And television news loves emergencies because it has like a visual element. It has a temporal element that's important. You can sell it kind of like, you know, like a presidential election, something that it's the changing of power. And I can't separate that out. I can't separate it out the fact that the networks love the idea of the story as much as they love the content of it, which is kind of bothersome.
You know what? This little statement and then one more question for you. I'll let you go. Okay. A very important anniversary passed in the terms of this politics meets TV news meets makeup. It happened last week. We're now in the sixth decade since it happened. The very first televised presidential election between Kennedy and Nixon. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And,
yep.
and
radio listeners thought Nixon won, and television listeners thought Kennedy won.
And why did? And do you know the makeup story?
Absolutely, yeah. Nixon didn't have a tan. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, go on.
And Nixon was unshaven, and he was also sweating on his upper lip, if I remember correctly. And so a lot of people think that, you know, history was basically changed. It was a very, very close election because Kennedy looked better on TV and Nixon did not wear makeup, or at least didn't wear it well in that broadcast.
Like, here's what happened. Kennedy just went through a California swing. He was nice and tan, okay?
Right, yep.
He refused makeup. Nixon smelled a trick. Tricky Dick smelled a trick. He's like, he gonna girlarize me. I'm not wearing any makeup.
That's really funny.
But he had an infection and he was notorious. He told Walter Cronkite, basically, I'm paraphrasing, I shave and my 5 o'clock shadow returns by 5:45. So they said, they convinced him, you look like hell. Try a little bit of this cheap applique on your chin. He put it on. The Klieg lights came on. He started sweating like a wedge of camembert. His eyes were shifty and he lost by a whisker. The moral of the story, brother, is when given a choice, people trust men who don't wear makeup.
That's a good lesson. I'll keep that in mind for sure.
And you know what? There's one more thing about that. Having been in TV news for 6 years, I had the anchorman's makeup tested. I did. I took it to the lab. Because if I'm going to put this on, I want to know what's in it. You want to know what the foundational element of boys' makeup is?
What?
Girls' makeup.
I was going to say, how is it different, men and women?
It's not.
Skin? Okay. I thought you were going to announce something
profound.
It's the
beauty myth. I mean, women are trying to unchain themselves from that, and guys are giving it up. Don't do it.
That's true.
Right? Tell them that, because everybody smells the artifice. That's part of it, too. Yeah, it just looks fake.
Yeah, I know. My dad was a TV reporter, so
I know.
And he would take his makeup off, and I was, you know, he was not the kind of person you wanted to watch taking off makeup, let's put it that way. So
that's all in the book.
I have a strong, yeah.
Well, but when he was on TV, though, it was a different time with lighting, and you almost needed to wear the makeup.
Oh, yeah.
Because
sure.
The lighting was a lot stronger and more intense. Now the cameras are way more sensitive. You don't have that issue.
So Bob's a videographer, Bob. So you don't need makeup now, do you?
No. No,
they,
you don't.
And yet they wear it so thickly, you can actually see it on high def, the ring.
Some people do, yeah.
It's insane.
And then they stop it at their neck.
Right, they don't blend it. Like, you got to blend that
if
shit.
If you're going to wear makeup, you need to know how to wear it. It doesn't need to look pasty or dry, and it doesn't stop at your chin.
Right.
You know, your ears and your neck are a completely different color.
CNN is so aggressive with their makeup. It's like, you know, the people who are, they look like Japanese dolls when they go on. I don't like that look at all.
A porcelain look.
And that's addressed in this excellent book, again, Hate, Inc., by Matt Taibbi. Matt, one last thing. What you didn't touch on, because it's not your realm, but local TV. Okay? The swamp that is that. Let me tell you where this converges. Were you aware... You remember the Flint water crisis, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Do you remember the mayor there, Karen Weaver?
Mm-hmm.
She was the Democratic National Convention, Hillary commercials, Snoop Dogg, lunch with Jada Pinkett Smith, right?
Yep. I didn't know the last part, but yep.
Were you aware she just lost an election?
No, I wasn't following that. Is that true?
Yeah, and a cloud of corruption investigations?
I heard something vaguely about that. But
why
yeah.
is that not? She'd be on Rachel Maddow now. Why wouldn't Rachel Maddow report such a thing?
Because she's a Democrat, maybe?
Right, because like you said, it's all team sport. Doesn't fit the narrative, does it?
Well,
go on. Maddow's not going to do it now because she gave her a pass.
Well, exactly. I think that, you know, just like, you know, we talk about what happens here locally. Once somebody is validated, or once you validate somebody, you can't come back and say, oh, I made a mistake. So you just don't talk about it. You just let it go.
Right.
And that's what we see here.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that's kind of the problem, right? Like, that's why this whole era of, you know, stations picking one side or the other and backing them to the hilt. And the problem with that is that what happens when somebody from one of your teams does something bad, then you're in a position where it just upsets all the audience expectations when you go on the air and you talk about that. And they're all afraid to do that, which is, it doesn't work. You have to have a little bit of distance from the process to report it right. And they're not doing that for sure. I think that's bad.
Where do we go for news, man? What do we trust?
I don't know. Story shows like you, I think, right? I mean, yours. I mean,
it's
going to be independent. You know, I think the same thing that's going to happen with politics is going to happen with news. I think people are going to go away from the traditional structures. They're going to go to their own, you know, alternative places, and that's going to be the foundation for the next generation.
And Trump and Sanders, there's one gift they gave us. It's that the invisible primaries, you write, the book is awesome, that you write about the party bosses, the consultants, the press corps, the donors, like, their grip is starting to slip.
Oh, they got, yeah, and I think that's one of the things I hated most about both of those people, is that, you know, these people are threatening their gravy train, and that day is ending, for sure.
Well, my brother, great book, Hate, Inc., talk to you soon, and remember, man, power to the people.
All right, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Charlie.
So where do we get your book, Matt, before you go? Where do we get your book?
You know, Amazon.com, anywhere, you know, bookstores. It's been out since October. So, appreciate it.
All right, bro.
All right, take care now.
Thanks, Matt.
So we're going to get books for Christmas. Charlie's book, Matt's book.
I'm telling you, you know, we've only done a few books on here.
I know,
but
people need to read.
The ones we do are awesome.
It's true.
I mean, you know, if you want to know how it works and you want to laugh, and you heard the guy, he's super smart.
Yeah.
But he's just known for, he's the Ginsu with his pen, man. It is awesome.
He's plugged in.
No, I mean, he's a Ginsu. His writing style is just, you'll laugh. Bob, you love to read.
I do.
Get it. So, look, go out and get the book. Remember, because I told you to.
We don't go out. We order from Amazon.
All right. You ready, man? Let's go. Remember, if you can't love one another, just try to get along. Because I told you to.
I take a little powder, take a little salt, put it in my shotgun, and I go walking out, chupa chupa chupa.
Charlie told me so. I won't even take a life, won't even take a limb. Just unload my shotgun, take a little skin. Chupa, 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 chupa. Bully, 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 bully. Looking high.
Mr. Charlie told me so.